Jeanne Flavelle's Hot Commodity Podcast Series. Empowering clients with commercial intelligence, supply chain expertise, and risk management solutions.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Craig Ruffalo, Vice President here at McKinney Flavelle. And today is November 26th, 2 days ahead of Turkey Day. And welcome to our Hot Commodity Podcast Series. And that was our fearless Kevin Combs. We're here because Mike Coughlin's not. Kevin, how are you today?
You know, it just seems like a typical holiday schedule. Everyone holding down the fort and trying to keep things afloat while Mike's off gallivanting around the country.
I know, right? He just likes to enjoy being out of the office. I think maybe there's more to that story later.
I think so.
But Kevin, you know, yesterday, of course, typical, we think it's going to be a quiet, you know, week leading into Thanksgiving. And we knew in the sugar industry that there was something going to have to happen due to imports. And I think we got our answer.
Well, the USDA delivered on their promise. How about that?
Let's be careful because that could be a first or it could be many to come. Who knows?
Well, it could be many, many things. What I think it wasn't was a significant move.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think the industry can all do the math. We went from about a 5 million ton crop to something well below that, 4 something. I'll love to hear your take on what you think the beet crop will end up, but that's obviously a lot more than 100,000 tons. But why don't you give me just a quick summarization of what might that do? What kind of sugar might we receive? Who might be taking advantage of this sugar? Is it all going to be white refined sugar that we're going to see in this 100,000 tons?
Well, that's a great question, and really we don't know. All we do know is it will be classified as refined sugar above 99.2 pole. So it literally could be just about anything, but it's going to fall under the terms of the amended suspension agreements, which were updated in 2017. So those have a minimum price of 28 cents FOB mill. And I'm sure, you know, the Mexican sellers are very aware of our markets and our prices and are looking at it and saying, ah.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I'm sure they're, you know, looking at a much higher price than that, and we'll see opportunity there. And, you know, the trade houses and people that typically go down there and buy the sugar and do a lot of the importing of this sugar are well aware of the values they can get in the U.S. market. So I'll expect that minimum price to not be an issue, and that sugar will be trading at higher values than that. So it really could be just about any type of sugar above 99.2, which is generally what Mexico produced all their sugar prior to the suspension agreements. They've had to dummy down their production come up with, you know, the raw sugar that they've been shipping to refiners in the 70%. So, you know, yeah, it looks really kind of ho-hum because I thought to make a splash, I really thought the USDA may say, hey, this is an emergency. Mexico's had a drought. Their production's going to be down.
Right. I know. So where would we go? Let's just say that this is what Mexico confirmed that they could guarantee that they could ship. So that means that we've still got, what, between 400,000 and 500,000 tons of additional sugar that we may need to see in this marketplace? Would that be about a sufficient enough imports over and above this 100,000?
If you looked at Mexico's quoted last WASDE report, it was like 1.1-something million short tons raw value. This brings it up to, you know, a little over 1.2. I think when the USDA gets a final production number, which, you know, January is our quote unquote final numbers.
Right.
But as we know, beet numbers can
trickle in
and change. And then we get early harvest and that could change the numbers they're using as well. But
true.
I think by January, I think you're going to need at least an additional 500,000 tons from Mexico, because I think the beet crop's probably going to be around 4.35 million tons.
Okay.
Once we factor all this losses in with the acreage abandonment.
Well, the challenge that provides is does Mexico even have a 500,000 tons additional that would qualify for usable sugar? I think one of the things that they could possibly have is overall sugar available, but what quality will the sugar be, and what will it fall under, a raw or a refined sugar quota? And that obviously then falls under who might receive the sugar in the United States. Will it be distributors? Will it be end users? Will it be cane refiners? I mean, how does that whole thing play out, do you see?
Well, I think the refiners have said, and through the ASA had a release that said, we can handle this. we should be operating under the terms of the amended suspension agreements.
Yeah.
And, you know, certainly Mexico is going to oblige to that as well. And
agreed.
They want all this first right of refusal.
That's right.
I think if you do the numbers in Mexico, even if their crop is as low as forecast by their government, which was just over 5.77 million metric tons, they'll have enough sugar to meet the full U.S. demand. They'll, fortunately, this will be a year where they don't have to return to the world market at right. these low prices.
That's so, right. That'll help the Mexican sugar industry.
Certainly huge help for the Mexican sugar industry after that. Not that they've been suffering with low prices.
Internally, that's been a pretty high-priced market.
Good market, but certainly not where they would like it to be. So I think when you look at it, Mexico has enough sugar.
Okay.
It really comes down to the mills are going to have to adjust their production, because if you follow the 70-30 on that larger quota,
that's right.
Holy hell, that's a lot of raw sugar that Mexican mills are going to have to produce when they're used to producing much better sugar.
That's right. I mean, the standard sugar that they produce is somewhere between 99.4 and 99.6 pole sugar. So
right.
under the amended suspension rules, as I understand it, that means that's a refined sugar. So again, it starts at that minimum price you mentioned at 28 cents. Cane refiner isn't traditionally going to look to buy its raw material at 28 cents, however.
Definitely not, although we're getting there,
we're
right?
getting close, right? So that only tells me that if you're looking at it from the end user's perspective in the United States, this quota, whatever it ends up being, and let's start with 100,000 tons, if you're expecting that to have an impact on price, is it really going to influence our refined sugar market that much?
Yeah, I don't think so, because this is basically just following the amended suspension agreements, but giving some opportunity for additional refined sugar to come in now. I think they're trying to take the edge off of the pricing and, you know, some of the really high prices you're hearing right now in the marketplace as people are scrambling to try to get coverage. But it's not a large volume. It's not a news source or anything that we weren't expecting to come in anyway.
Right.
Given the fact that we're looking at suspension agreements and operating under those rules regardless.
Correct.
It's just a little bit more refined sugar. Yeah. So, you know, people out there that, you know, I'm sure the USDA put out their announcement saying, hey, we're going to address this market because they're getting flooded with phone calls.
Oh, I'm sure that this is reactionary to all of the pressure that being put forth by end users, for sure.
Yeah, so this just kind of squelches some of that noise out there. It gives people something to go after and quiets the market a little bit, but I really don't see it having any impact. And, you know, when you look at basically the beet sugar industry fully sold at this point until they maybe, you know, some people have a little bit more sugar to sell when they get their final beets processed and know what their production is versus where they're sold. So it really falls down to three cane refining companies to sell out their remaining capacity. And as, you know, we'd expect before all this hit, they are probably 75-80% sold.
So yeah, I would agree with that. And of course, you have the traditional retailers that they held a little higher percent of the total market share against with cane refining operations, that is. And so they're going to hold back some production away from the industrial market. All bottom line, I think from this report, as Kevin has alluded to, in my opinion, is it is something to at least take the hurt away or the hotness of this marketplace and squelch it a little bit. And I would tell you this, the supply chain of Mexican sugar from the mills to the United States is not simple, as Kevin will tell you. And if you want more information on that, I suggest you pick up the phone, you call McKinney Favelle, you ask for Kevin, Mike, myself, or Nicole, and you talk through the supply chain. Because as we've done it before, it is not simple. It's not turnkey. And without having a large quota of refined sugar, Kevin, I'll bet you there's not a lot of equipment sitting around looking to start this back up.
That's the hardest, probably the hardest thing is, as we saw, it's difficult to get those supply chains moving, get the equipment moving to ship rail or whatnot. And now we're only looking at it potentially on a short-term basis.
Yeah.
To try to get things moving for 9 months before we return to the next crop year and hopefully knock on wood, you know, great supplies next year.
Right. So it's temporary.
It'll be temporary. So you're not going to get a lot of people jumping to try to make things happen in a different way.
I agree.
What we saw in 2007 forward.
Yeah.
Hey, people are looking at that as a long-term maneuver and making investments in operations aren't going to happen today.
That's right. I agree. So, hey, with that, we'll wrap this one up today. Everybody, as Mike always says, live with an attitude of gratitude. And happy Turkey Day, everybody. Gobble, gobble. And until next time, don't forget, McKinney Flavella's out there. Come call us. Come talk to us about these markets. And if you haven't, please get that invitation and sign up for our Cocoa webinar that's going to be on December 11th. And if you haven't already, you got to call your McKinney people. The colloquium is right around the corner. Don't forget, we want to see you there. Palm Springs.
And more importantly, don't forget to put down on your calendar, we're going to have our spring seminar in 2020.
That's right, April 29th
Wednesday,
in Chicago.
April 29th in the Chicago suburbs. So,
and you got to come say hi to Kevin if you come there. It's a mandatory requirement.
I hope so.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Have a wonderful holiday. Stay safe. Be out there with your friends and family. And until next time, take care.
That concludes this podcast episode. For expanded commentary and more detailed information, log on to McKinney Flavell's IQ Ingredient Intelligence platform and listen to our Market Insights podcast. If you're not a subscriber, visit McKinney-Flavell.com for more information. And as always, follow us on YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter.